Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you so much for showing up. This is Opening Perspective, and I am dedicated to changing the inner sense of hope and knowing that you feel in your life so that you can rise to the exciting needs of our planet today. Opening Perspective is engaged in thought-provoking ideas, conversation, and topics. We are bringing about your ability to know your deepest sense of self. Today's show, we're going to be discussing control, whether or not you're controlling in your life, and whether or not others are controlling in your life, and what that actually means, what that actually brings about that creates discord in your life. Before I do that, I want to give out the call-in number because we're going to be taking calls today. And the call-in number is 646-378-1741. That number again is 646-378-1741. The reason why I chose to talk about this call is because I find that being controlling in our lives can seem like such a bad thing, and yet everywhere I look, I see people being controlling. I see our government being controlling. I see all kinds of attributes of control. And the interesting thing is that for most of us, we don't really know that we're doing it. We don't know how to stop it, and we don't know when we started. And we're actually in this place where it becomes a vicious cycle in our lives. If you've ever been told that you're being controlling, especially when in that moment what you're really being is caring. You're caring about what others think. Then it can be very painful, extremely painful for someone to call you controlling. No, I'm not controlling. I'm just caring. So let's talk about this a little bit because I really truly believe that we're entering into a new paradigm where we're moving from being creatures that are almost constantly in reaction to the world around us instead of in a creative state of being. And being controlling in the world is a byproduct from this reactionary, fearful framework. People who are controlling may find this conversation painful, but just hang in there because I'm going to actually give you a practice that will shift your ability to release your controlling behavior. I'm also going to give you some tips and ideas about where you can go to further this conversation. You see, the reason why I'm bringing this up is I think that, you know, last week we did a conversation on suffering and joy, and the week before that we did hope, delusion, and faith, and the week before that we did a call on fear. And if you look at the way that we're building this radio program, what I'm doing is I'm providing you with the tools that you need to make this transition to help shift the planet to where it needs to be, because it starts with you. But our individual behaviors actually are rolling out all over the planet and creating the mess and the disease, D-I-S-dash-E's, that we're seeing. And that mess and disease is inside of us. There's nothing that you can experience inside of your body that doesn't affect the outside world. Even if you stuff it, it still shows up in yourself as sickness. And in order for us to actually make this transition into the life that we really want to be living here on this planet together in cooperation and collaboration, we have to release our controlling behavior. And the good news is that when you do understand how to shift your behavior, what occurs, what arises for you, is more beauty, because collaborating with people is intimate, it's fun, it's juicy, it's exciting. It's where you really want to be if you could release the fear that you need to control the things around you. So I want to give you an example of how this showed up in my life this week. I have a great, amazing partner who I'm deeply in love with, and we were having a wonderful morning in the kitchen. It was exciting, and we were just, you know, having coffee and talking, and it was just lovely. I mean, just this lovely time. He went outside to get the mail or something from his car. I can't remember why, and I'm continuing to do the dishes in the kitchen. And he comes in, And he looks at me and he says, hey, I just want to tell you, you know, our neighbors, and give you a little sidebar, our next door neighbors are an older couple, and she was walking her dog and the leash got wrapped around her legs and she broke both of her legs. So she's now in a wheelchair and her husband's taking care of her. So he comes in the house and he says, hey, I just want to let you know that I think that you need to park your car up a little bit more so that our neighbors can make sure that she can get in and out of the driveway. And I said, I do. I park as far up as I can. It's just that last night, there was a car parked in front of it, and you wouldn't have been able to get in the driveway, but I always do. And he says, look, obviously you don't because you parked too far back, and don't worry. You know, he didn't say don't worry about me, but he said, you know, I would rather have you do this. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. I get it. It was just this one time. He said, look, I understand that, but I want you to make sure, you know, I can show you where it is. And I'm kind of paraphrasing the conversation, but we went back and forth until we started getting upset with each other. I'm like, I got it. Okay, drop it. I get it. Enough. I got it. I know where to park. I can do this, you know. And he came back again, not hearing my saying yes. I got it. And finally, I was like, okay, conversation's done. This is escalating, and I don't want to have this conversation right now. And I kind of walked away, and he walked away, and both of us were tense and upset. And I was like, what the heck just happened there? And then I realized what happened after I thought about it. What was really going on there was he went outside, and I've checked in with him. I also told him I'm going to have this story on the radio program. He went outside, and he got concerned for our neighbor and how hard it is for her to get in and out of her car with this wheelchair. And he'd noticed that they were parking their car in different places, and he was worried that it was because we weren't leaving them enough room to get in and out of their driveway and be able to also park in front of their house. They have two cars. And he went about fixing that in his mind immediately. Okay, I need to have Zen and our roommate David, you know, come forward more in their car. I need to have this, you know, conversation with them. And so then he fixes it in his mind, and he knows what I must do. And he comes in and tells me, this is what you need to do so that you can fix this situation. I said, okay. And I explained why it was different today. Well, the problem, this is where it turned into controlling behavior. What was really happening was he was worried about our neighbors, and he was actually attempting to engage me in a conversation of solving a situation that he saw. But instead of engaging me in a collaborative conversation on how to do that, what he did was is he figured out the solution, knew what was happening, then told me what I had to do. And if he didn't feel I was complying completely, including understanding how deeply he's concerned about our neighbors, then it turns into this forceful communication of what I have to do. Maybe some of you have had this in your life. I know I have done this. And I just want to say that I also have this behavior that goes on, and I'm working on it, you know. But I went up to him afterwards, and we had a conversation. I said, look, here's a way. I explained what I saw, and he agreed and was like, wow, he's great that way. And I said, look, next time, instead of figuring it out for me of what you think I need to do and then coming in and telling me what to do, which is being controlling, I would love it and appreciate it if you would come in and tell me what your concern is, because the conversation could have gone way differently if you'd come in and said, I'm noticing our neighbors are parking their car in different places, and I'm concerned that she's having issues with her wheelchair of getting in and out of her car. What do you think we could do to make it easier? Maybe we could pull different cars forward, or we could put your car in front of the driveway, or what can we do to support them and make their lives easier? All of a sudden, I'd be like, oh, great. Well, we could do this. We could do that. And all of a sudden, we're engaged in the conversation fully. And what is more important is that this started with a fear of his, a concern of his that he was attempting to fix. And that concern is what caused the assertive behavior, the forceful behavior. I'm trying to do something good here, but the concern wasn't being addressed by us. That's what the issue is. And so in our lives, there are a lot of concerns that are happening that aren't being addressed, that we're trying to fix in different ways, other than actually going for the, you know, expressing the concern itself. I'm going to give one other story here, and then I'm going to talk a little bit more about controlling behaviors and kind of give you ideas of ways that they're showing up in our lives. And then we'll go through a communication practice that will allow you to start unraveling this. I was at a dinner with some very progressive people that I would say are just past moderate on the liberal side. But, you know, really upstanding, great people trying to do good for the planet, you know, appreciate freedom, you know, all of these various things. And we're having a conversation, and three of them have teenagers. And we start talking about their teenagers and what they're doing, and one of them brings up that they now have a telephone, and I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what one was saying, where you could actually program in the radius of where the phone is allowed to be, and if the kid traveling on this, you know, with this phone in their pocket travels outside of the radius that's been allowed by the phone automatically calls the parent with a text message and lets them know that the kid's gone out of the area. And all the parents right there thought that was such a great idea and a way of being able to control their kids. And it really flashed for me. Wow. That sounds a lot like what our government does, or many other governments around the planet that are dictatorships. Restricting the movement of their citizens. And it comes out of fear of the kids getting into trouble, and it comes out of the fear of the kids not being able to manage themselves or make stupid decisions. But really, quite honestly, by the time that your kids are teenagers, either you've done a good job or you haven't done a good job. Hormones are going to take over, and what you've brought into their lives up until that point is what's going to make a difference. So for them to be that concerned, there's a breakdown in the education. And I'm not saying that teenagers don't go off and do what they're going to do. They're dumb. They have hormones. If they get around the opposite sex, they lose their boundaries and their, you know, minds, basically. And that's all true. But there's still a core foundation that's there. And it's the same thing as a government not trusting its citizens or not believing that it can trust its citizens to, you know, do what it wants them to do without restrictions. There's a certain way in which the controlling behavior is coming out of fear that we can't manage ourselves. And I personally have read, you know, statements from people who are in high levels of power saying that the masses are idiots and the masses can't manage themselves and keep them dumbed down with media and so forth. So it's interesting that this controlling behavior, it's happening in all of us. There is no difference between our microcosm and our macrocosm. And so what you can witness and begin shifting in your microcosm actually does make a difference in the macrocosm. Because the controlling behavior conversations and ways of being that we have in our home lives are the same that we carry into our business lives, are the same that we carry into the various places that we experience our community. We play tricks on one another to get what we want. Now, what I'd like to say is that there should be no shame in this conversation. I don't want anyone to be ashamed of their controlling behavior or fearful of their controlling behavior or any of that, because honestly, everyone that I know is controlling. We live in what's perceived by our minds as a scary place, that at any moment things can go wrong. And in things going wrong, we can be unsafe and hurt. And so we try to protect ourselves and keep ourselves safe by controlling what's going on around you. Unfortunately, you can't control what's going on around you. There are too many things that are ongoingly occurring that disallow for you to control everything. And even trying to can cause you to not be focused on the present moment. You're present instead on changing a possible future that could be coming your way, instead of actually being present in the moment and being really truly able to be present with what's going to create safety and security for you, what's going to move the ball forward as far as love and joy and connection. And so all of us have picked up, and I'm except maybe the Dalai Lama. You know, I mean, there are definitely some people out there that have been practicing their whole lives and have a state of allowing going on, but really, it's rampant amongst all of us. So I'd rather have it not be something that you're doing wrong, instead be something that you're working on for the rest of us. Taking that ball on, because if you make the transition in your life, it makes it easier just in witnessing you, just in being around you, for others to make that transition. So this is a very important discussion. And it is really a crucial piece of having a paradigm shift where we move out of from a reactive paradigm into the creative paradigm, from a controlling, competitive paradigm into a collaborative paradigm. And in stating that, I'm not saying competition is bad. The true definition of competition is bringing out the best in one another. The true definition. However, the way that competition has been used is the survival of the fittest, the philosophy that stands behind being able to clobber somebody else and having that be okay because you're fitter, that is not serving us at this moment. And I'm not even sure that that theory is wholly accurate. So if we're truly entering into a new paradigm, which I believe that fully that we are, how do we move from being controlling in the world as a byproduct of our reaction to fear, as a byproduct for our reaction to what's going to be happening in the near future? How do we move away from justifying our controlling behavior by stating in that, you know, that by trying to control the situation, you're actually being creative. You're actually trying to receive an outcome that's most beneficial for all, even if it is your idea of what's most beneficial for all. You know, I remember when I was, I am a diehard recovering control freak, and I will be a diehard recovering control freak for the rest of my life. And when I really was in this blind spot, I would be like, but I know what's best, and I know that if we do it this way that it's going to work, and if we do it that way, it's not going to work, and we need to do it this way, and I try to coerce people into doing it my way. You know, it's like hilarious, all for the benefit of everyone else. I have to laugh at this now. But I would have stated at the height of my controlling ways that I was justified in my controlling because, of course, I was so smart and I had all the solutions. But what it really came down to for me is witnessing that control truly comes down to fear and fear of things going wrong. Now, I do understand that there are those who want to control others for power. But even they, when it comes down to it, are driven by fear. And as we discussed in the fear call, there's a way of dealing with fear. Well, go back and listen to that radio program a few weeks ago. You can get the practice on how to shift fear. Because if you take on having a more collaborative life, which is going to benefit you so greatly, from your physical health, because controlling is a deep clenching resistance in the body, which shows up as stress. It is the closing of the IGS. As you become controlling your internal guidance system, I teach a practice called internal guidance system, and I recommend that you go to powermanifestation.com and check out the video there to get a practice, an experiential practice that will allow you to get in touch with this internal guidance system. But it really resides between your throat and your stomach area, and it's constantly expanding and contracting or in a neutral state based on whether or not your thoughts are in alignment with where you intend to go in a part of your purpose and truth or not, only to your thoughts. So all anxiety, all stress, all fear, all worry is in direct relation to your thoughts. Nothing outside of you. It's what you're thinking about the thoughts outside of you. And control shows up in your internal guidance system as a collapsed tightening feeling, and that collapsed tightening feeling literally leads to illness in the body. Stress is the number one cause of illness. So there's one way that taking on this controlling practice can make a difference, but there's another way too, and that is it feels good to communicate with people from a collaborative effort. It feels good to get agreement. It feels good to have intimacy and teamwork in your life. It shifts everything, and it really gets down to when you're controlling, you are moving through an attempt to have things go the way you want, and what ends up happening is everywhere you turn, you're at odds with somebody. People are unhappy. Not everybody's getting what they want most of the time. And so opening up into a collaborative conversation with people and being able to express first, what is your fear and concern? I am concerned that our neighbors are having a hard time of it, and I want to make it easy on them. How can we do that? Presenting that first instead of presenting your solution that must happen, is one of the first steps to shifting your controlling behavior. And most often, it'll show up as a fear first, and then a desire, and then an action. So by discovering the fear that's making you desire to move into a direction, you're actually already beginning to shift the control behavior, and you're engaging people in collaboration by letting them know what you're trying to achieve. Now, the risk here, the fearful risk here, once again, is that they may not find what you finding important. They may actually say, no, I'm not going to change the way I park. I park where I park, and that's good for me. I don't want to go back another foot and a half or a foot and a half forward where you may hit my car coming in and out of the driveway. Your concern is not important to me. And yes, that's a risk. However, you can at least know the truth there, and you won't go into battle. We can't have more battling. It hurts us. And it's not the kind of energy we want to create moving forward. I don't know about you, but when those battles arise, I get tired. I get tired, and it detracts and distracts me from what I do want to be focusing on that's important to me, that's a value of what I'm producing in the world. So the more that I can shift the battle into collaboration, the more energy I have to do what I'm here to do on the planet. I don't want a distraction. I'm really thankful that my partner and I were able to fix that situation that we came in contact with and witness that, oh my goodness, we have an opportunity here to practice this together. And so we committed to practicing and to noticing and to be okay if one of us calls the other one on it, and then we go right back to what is your concern? What is it that you're concerned with that we can find a way to support you in? All the time knowing that it may not be his concern, it may not be my concern, but at least we have a good, solid communication from that place. Now, I want to show you and discuss a little bit about, and we're going to take calls towards the end of the hour, but I want to talk a little bit about how do you know where is, you know, where you're controlling and where you're not? Where is it showing up? I got this great email from a student a couple of years ago who, when I was doing teaching on how to release controlling behavior. And if you go to powermanifestation.com, there's information there on that. But I got a website now. I want to say it's paulandlaney.com, PAULANDLAYNE.com. Now, I don't have any affiliation with this site. In fact, you'll find that I don't have affiliation with anything that I recommend generally. I have no affiliation with this site, and I can't vouch for the content. And I've not checked them out. They have courses and things on relationship. I've not checked them out, anything like that. But instead of reinventing the wheels, they do have some questions on their website that I thought were incredibly valuable. So I want to read some of these questions to you. And I want you to look at yourself and see if any of this is happening. And then what we'll do is we'll unwrap that a little bit. Here's a question for you. Do you have an authoritative attitude? Are you the person with the right answers all the time, the one who always knows best? If your answer is yes, there's a good chance that the way you're doing it is in a controlling way. Even if you have buy-in from the people around you, they may be afraid of you or afraid of your authority, and so they have buy-in. There may not be that opening of everyone in the room's internal guidance system moving forward in the same direction. Do you have extreme difficulty knowing or acknowledging your mistakes? Oof, this was one for me. Have to say, mistakes, I'm way better now. It's not that I can't acknowledge them. They hurt. I feel vulnerable and exposed, you know. Would noticing and acknowledging your mistakes bring you into a place of feeling vulnerable or exposed? Do you pretend your mistakes didn't happen? Or do you find another place or a person to blame, or do you get defensive when they're brought up and over-explain why that happened? I found myself doing this just the other day when we were talking about the parking, and I had to explain why I had parked back a foot and a half because someone had parked just kind of over our driveway, and I wanted to have room for him to get in. I found myself getting a little defensive as if I had made a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. But it was just, you know, it's where the ego goes. And I was like, okay. I already agreed, yes, no. Do you need to feel responsible for other people's lives? Are you the one that feels like you need to take care of other people? You know what's best. And you may know what's best for your sister, your brother, your aunt, your friends. But do you actually feel responsible for them doing well? That's control. Are you constantly giving advice and trying to influence the choices of others? That's being controlling. There's one thing of making a suggestion. It's another thing to be controlling. I've had this great course that I will talk about over and over. It's called Celebrate Men, Satisfied Women. It is an incredible course offered by an organization called PAX, P-A-X. It's a course for women. I think every woman in the United States should make it. It will change your relationship to men. It's really a powerful course. And they said, you know the difference between mothering and smothering? Mothering is saying, here, take a jacket, it's cold. Smothering is if the person says, nah, it's okay, I'm all right. You go into, take a jacket. Hey, every time you go out, you get cold, you need to take a jacket, and going into this, and the next thing you know, you're handing it to them and pushing them out the door saying, take a jacket. If you witness yourself doing that, if someone says no, maybe you make the suggestion one more time in a different way. Do you witness yourself really forcing them into that? Even because you know it's best for them. You know that's really the best thing for them. Now remember, most of our controlling behavior does come under the guise of trying to do things that are right, that are good, that are positive. Are you trying to get others' lives to work so they in turn can give you what you want? Are you trying to get others' lives to work so they in turn can give you what you want? Do you exhibit extreme agitation when things don't go your way? That's that control energy that I was talking about. Oh, controlling is so exhausting and so tiring. Do you get angry when a situation is not under your control? Do you feel that the weight of the world is resting on your shoulders? Or do you feel indispensable? If you didn't wake up one day and go to work, everything around you is going to fall apart. That's control. All of these are signs of being controlling. And I would say that all of these are, if you have a yes to one of these, you have control issues. And that's okay. For goodness sakes, we all do. Are you quick to judge free-spirited, undisciplined people? Do you feel disgusted about their apparent lack of discipline? Do they make you nervous? Oh, what are they going to do that's going to blow this project or blow this thing? Or are they going to show up? Or what? Control. Are you constantly driven to attain the ideal? Is perfection your goal? Is your sense of self-worth determined by being the best, always coming out on top? Is winning everything to you? I mean, I could keep going on. I think you're getting the idea. You could go to the website and read for yourself. There's a few more in here. Is verbal one-upsmanship your communication style? Are you rebellious? I mean, there's so many different things. Resist control by others. People who are rebellious and resist being controlled by others are often huge control freaks. It's the flip side of the projection coin. So, as a recovering control freak myself, I must say that I can absolutely say yes to every one of these at one time or another in my life. And currently today, I'm still working through these and making sure that I am like being on task. And I fall into this. It is a habitual way of being that you learn in order to protect yourself as you get older in life, you know, as you go through life. We learn them when we're younger. Ooh, I've got to fix this. The last time this happened, it really hurt. It's miserable, and it's an unhappy way to live. But I didn't know there was another way, personally. Most people don't understand that there is another way. And the other way is what I call a state of allowing. Now, I'm not talking allowing as in I'm letting people run over me. Allowing literally means letting the universe show up for what it's ready to offer you and being present in the moment, determining what you would like to create with what's there. There's a difference of projecting into the future what you feel you need to be creating in a control atmosphere. And then there's also the relaxing and witnessing what's happening and deciding what you do want to have happen. So, for instance, when my partner came into the kitchen, he could have come up with what he did want to have happen, and he did. We figured this out. But what would have been great is, wow, I really want to support them and make sure that their lives are easy right now. I am just so saddened by the situation they are in together. What can we do? That's witnessing the state of allowing, witnessing what's present and coming up with what you want to create versus witnessing what's present, projecting a fearful, uncomfortable, or challenging future, coming up with a solution to how to avoid that future, and then telling the people around you what they need to do so that you can have that future for yourself. And it's not always selfish about you. Most often, we control freaks use other people and their happiness as guidelines to make sure that, you know, we have lots of backup. I want this for you. But it doesn't work. What it works is coming in and saying, here's what I want to do. How can you participate? How can you contribute? Think about trying this with your kids. I really need to get out of here tomorrow morning on time. I have a meeting. And so how can we prepare tonight? What can you do with your morning routine to prepare tonight to be able to be ready for tomorrow? What ideas do you have? Here's a few I have. Let's pick a couple and get them done. Does that feel okay to you? Does that work for you? Totally different conversation. Think about having these conversations with your mates about the socks on the floor and various things that irritate us. So, this is how it's very simple to start moving out of being a control freak or controlling. You don't even have to be a control freak, you could just be controlling. To start moving out of that, all you need to do is for me, there's a response that I feel in my body when I'm moving into control. And this took a little bit of time to learn. But if you find that any of those questions that I asked are you, in those questions, you will start to discover where you're controlling. And once you discover where you're controlling, when you're trying to create an outcome, regardless of what the cause or will be in the future, or regardless who's going to benefit, when you're trying to create an outcome without expressing your concern or fear as to why that outcome needs to be, you are moving into control. So witness in yourself and others control. Witness, you'll find it everywhere. You'll find it in the media. You'll find it in television shows. Many of the plot lines that you're going to witness in the shows and the movies and things that are people being controlling. It's so prevalent in our lives. It's happening so many places. We call it ego. We call it agenda. Everybody's got an agenda. No, everybody's being controlling because they want to create a future that it serves them without engaging the rest of us in it. And then once you discover that you're being controlling, look at what your fear is about the future, what your concern is, and here comes the tough part. To authentically step forward and say, look, this is what I'm seeing and this is what I'm concerned about. What can we do? Can you help me? What's possible to have this not occur? You may have somebody go, I don't see that being something that's going to occur at all because their reality is not your reality. All the things they're trying to protect themselves against are different than what you're trying to protect yourself against because you guys are different. Your background, your history of what has been a problem for you in the past has not been the same. So they may not agree with you at all and say, okay, I get it. I understand. You don't see that as being a problem, and I'm really having a controlling reaction here that I want to, like, make something happen. And do you really not see that that is something that is possible? And then it also takes a little bit of letting go, because if you don't let go, you're not in the present moment. You're not actually in a state of allowing. And sometimes what it'll take is the wait and see. I want to recommend an opportunity that you guys can look into, a book and a course. It's called Nonviolent Communication. Nonviolent Communication, and you can check them out. They have a website, at cnvc.org. And if you've been dancing around taking Marshall Rosenberg's, you know, work into your life, now would be a great time to check it out. They have workshops, introductory workshops and things that are so inexpensive. They are a nonprofit that is really making this work available to everyone. And what they do is they point out what controlling behavior is, what violent, or they call it violent, but their definition of violent is not the normal definition of violent where you're punching somebody out or anything, but just being controlling. And they show all the various ways that we are controlling in our conversations and with others, and they present you with feel-good, open IGS ways of moving forward. So I just want to give you this little piece. It's in their book, which is Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life, and it's about creating your life, your relationships, and your world in harmony with your values, what you really value. You know, if you look back at the conversation that I've been talking about, you know, my partner had a value of taking care of our neighbors and making their lives easier. So it's about being able to communicate our values. So here are some expressions that are controlling emotions that we use with each other. Okay? I feel you don't love me. Now, so how could that be a controlling conversation, controlling statement? I feel you don't love me. Because what comes up is that person then has to either deny that they don't love you, you know, say they don't love you, or they have to say that they do love you, and you're trying to control them showing you love. Instead of saying, you know, it'd be great. Do you have some space to put a little attention on me? I could use a little loving from you. There's a choice there. But I feel you don't love me is something that you have to that person has to respond to, and it's controlling. I feel scared when you say that. I feel scared when you say that. Controlling. They have to soothe you once again. When you don't greet me, I feel neglected. So in other words, in the future, you must greet me or know that I'm going to feel neglected. I feel misunderstood. How can that be a conversation where you're being controlling? Now that person has to sit and listen to you tell them again what it is that you're trying to say. And you're also telling them that they don't understand you. Instead of saying, do you understand what I'm saying? Is this something that's landing for you? Here's another one. I feel good about what you did for me. How could that be controlling, right? I feel good about what you did for me. I want you to do it again. That was what made me feel happy. When you actually get in and dive into the internal guidance system, what you'll find is that there is nothing outside of yourself that makes you happy. It's all the story that's running in the information that your mind is percolating that has your body feel good or bad. And no one around you can make you feel good or bad. It's a really eye-opening understanding. And just because you have the understanding doesn't mean you're not going to say, I still say, you know, you made me feel bad. And I have to check myself and go, wait a minute, he can't make me feel any way. She can't make me feel any way. This is me creating meaning about what just happened. And that meaning that I'm personally creating about what just happened is what's making me feel bad. So we have a contest going on that I want to talk about really quick, and then we'll get back into this topic. And I would love to take a call or two if you're interested. My number is 646-378-1741, 646-378-1741. If you're interested in calling in, you're more than welcome to. I would love that. And the contest that we have going on is to create a sound like brand for the beginning and the ending of our show. We'd like it to be about 10 to 15 seconds long. We'd love it to hold the energy of opening perspective And you're welcome to contact us to get anything that you might need, a sound bite from us or anything like that would be great. We would love to have something that we could play and that would, has come from our listeners. And we're going to go ahead and make the choice in about 5 weeks on the March 20th radio program. And what you'll receive if we pick your choice is a one-year exclusive media membership, which has got 75 hours worth of topics that teach you various things, like go dive way deeper into what I talk about on the radio show, a set of my Power Manifestation CD set, and then our Internal Guidance System Beginning with the Basics course, which is 12 hours of information around the Internal Guidance System. This whole package all together comes out to be about $700, and we're going to announce the winner on our website and on the show. And so if you're interested, all you need to do is email radio@internalguidancesystem.com to let us know that you're entering into the contest. And then turn in your sound logo, your sound brand for us so that we can use it. And as we get bigger and bigger, we'll keep letting people know that you've contributed in that way, and I'll put it on my blog talk radio profile page talking about you. So I would appreciate that. And then also we have, this is interesting, last week we gave away a free gift, which was a two-hour piece of audio and a workbook, which is the beginning Internal Guidance System Teleseminar Basics. And only one person emailed us to get the free course. And so I'm a little surprised because we had almost 600 people download the show and so forth. And so what I'm imagining is that everybody, by the time they got into downloading the show, figured that the offer had already been, you know, used. So I'm going to give you the coupon code again. It's FREETELE, F-R-E-E, T-E-L-E, free tell. And what that will do is you'll go ahead and you just go to our website and you order the downloadable product. If you have a problem with this, you can email us at radio@powermanifestation.com. But you just go in and you click on the Internal Guidance System Basics and you type in free tell, and what will happen is you'll get the free recording. And so go ahead and check that out. We'd love that. And if you have any problems, go ahead and, like I said, and email us. Now, what I'd like to do is I want to talk about this amazing thing that happened in Australia today. And I didn't know this was going to happen when I chose the topic for this call, but this program today. Australia, the Prime Minister of Australia, came out and made a public apology to the way that Australia had treated its indigenous population, its Aborigine population. Now, I don't know if you have any idea of what had happened to their indigenous population, but basically what they did was is because they were continuing on with their traditions, their tribal traditions, the Australian government got very upset and frustrated, and for their own good, they decided that they needed to emerge the children of the Aborigines into their Western system. So they took all the children away that were born for a period of many, many years. This happened all the way up until 1970. And they placed these children in white families to be Westernized. And where they placed these children was often hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, you know, Australia is a big place, of miles away from their parents. So their parents would have to walk and travel for days to get even a visiting right with their kids. And they lost a lot of their heritage. They lost connection with their families. They lost, I mean, think about how you would feel if your child was taken away or if you were taken away from your parents and told, this is what you have to do, this is who you have to be, this is what you have to let go. And here's these people who basically think of you as being subservient and not as good as themselves and part of this program to save the children. Talk about control. For their own good. That's the interesting thing about the controlling behavior. It's very, very often disguised as for someone else's own good. Well, I am just floored and proud that the Prime Minister came out And not only did he apologize for the way that they had behaved, and you can never undo that, but talk about a turning the tide of control. This is happening all over the planet. That's why I'm engaging you in it. That's why I want you to jump on board. But people from all walks of life flooded the streets of Australia this morning and watched. In the financial district, for instance, they set up huge, huge, huge screens of the hour-long address that the Prime Minister gave, and people came out of their offices and flooded the streets and stood together cheering, watching these monitors. I heard on the radio that Australia stopped and took notice. And he went ahead and he made promises about education and how they were going to, you know, solve this situation that is happening. The Aborigine has 17 years lifespan difference from the other Australians. 17 years earlier they'd pass away, and he agreed to make health issues. So I'm just bringing this up because we witness how control occurs on our planet and the suffering that is caused. And then we move into a new way. And this is the shift we're in. This is the paradigm shift that we're in. And we have a caller on the line. And so I'm going to go ahead and call her from the 510 area code. Let's see if I can get you on the air. All right, you're on the air, 510 area code.
Hi, Zen. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thanks for the call. This is really great information.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said thanks for the call and thanks for the radio show. This has been really, it's been wonderful listening to you over the last few weeks. Another great topic. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Good. So, did you hear what I just said?
Yes, I did. Thank you. You're so welcome. I'm really happy to be doing it.
I'm calling on a cell phone, so I'm not sure if I'm hearing you completely, but the conversation that you had begun around this call, around the controlling behavior, it seems like, you know, to me that, you know, this is how humanity functions, and as much as it functions for the bad, there's also a lot of good that comes from sort of, you know, pre-planning and knowing what it is that you want from the outcome and doing what you think it is that's going to make it happen. You may be working with many people and you don't know how they think or how they work, but you need to get something done. You need to get it done in a certain way. I mean, that's how a lot of nonprofits function. They have a vision, they work that vision, and they make it happen.
I can
completely,
yeah, absolutely, and I can. There's a difference. Okay, this is. I totally agree with you, in the point that you want to set a vision, you want to figure out how to get there, and then you want to move forward with that. I absolutely agree, and there's something very different now about. Now this is here's a few caveats that I want to give. One is, most actual controlling behavior comes from fear, not creating a vision, inspiring others to move forward into that vision and produce it, as well as contribute their unique abilities. Now, for most people, especially in like a nonprofit world, you never know what your team, you're right, what your volunteers are able to do and so forth. But if you have the same standard of care of working with and training your volunteers, there is a certain level of assurity that you can have that they're going to know what to do and how to do it. Okay? So, setting a vision and moving forward into the future with that vision, inspiring others to come with you and having their unique gifts be a contribution to what you're achieving is exactly what I'm talking about in moving into a collaborative way of being. Now, this is where it begins to fall apart. You set the vision. You come up with a way that you think the vision has to happen. And if people do not begin to unfold the vision in the way that you think it has to happen, or if things begin to change and you begin to foresee a future that you're fearful of occurring, and then you begin running around trying to control what other people are doing. So this vision of the future that you see, which is no longer, which is now a reaction, not a creative vision, it's now a reaction that you're seeing in controlling others. That's when you begin the control cycle. Now, the worst case scenario of that is that one, you lose all of your team members and you actually draw to you because you're focused on this problem instead of focused on the solutions. Okay, showing up for you. But the other worst case scenario is we do not know what's going to happen in the future. And when you come from the closing of your internal guidance system, when you're having thoughts that are fearful and are closing you, which we don't become controlling over opening sensations. We become inspiring. The opening of the IGS leads to inspiration in others. But the closing of the IGS around control issues actually means that what you're thinking about the future is not true. Also, if you don't include people in what your fear and your concern is about that projected future, you are wiping out all of that intelligence around you and that support that you could have in shifting the direction of that future. And it's a lack of trust, and it's an ego issue that you know better than anyone else. Now, ego is just a collection of stories that your body and your mind has created to guide you. That's all your ego is. So you have a story that nobody knows how to help you. You have a story, not you personally, but we have stories when we're in those situations that this future is going to happen because we know. But anyone who talks about what's going to happen in the future does not know what's going to happen in the future. It's something that you can't be sure of. But what you can be sure of is on the ground, right then and there, you can authentically present what your concern is, what your fears are, and what you desire to have happen, and then allow everyone to show up to support you in that moment. That present moment, you can be sure of.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I think I see how in theory that functions. I'm also looking at the work I do with event planning, and it seems like oftentimes in a real world situation you don't have a whole lot of time for independent people who are coming from different areas who are all functioning to get one goal, but may not have time for planning and collaboration, even though they are collaborating because everybody's doing something for the same event. Usually there needs to be, some sort of a hierarchy or a leadership.
Oh, you can be an absolute, so first of all, leadership does not necessarily, is actually not being controlling. Any solid leadership program that you engage yourself in, it's about not being controlling. It's about being of service to your team.
Well,
leadership
I do.
It becomes a support role. And so there's a fantastic book that I just would love to give you to read, which is From Good to Great. And they talk about level 5 leaders and what they are. And it really isn't about being in control and leadership. And I think that your example of event planning is brilliant. What a perfect example. So when everyone's coming together for a high-stress scenario, it's even more important for people not to be projecting something into the future and then running around trying to change what everybody's doing to stop that outcome. Because without expressing the concern that someone has to their team can't have an eye out for it and head it off at the pass with them. So they will put rules into place that don't necessarily make sense to their team. Their team will try to follow the rule without ever even really understanding what it's about. And then when they get it wrong in their execution of it, the leader gets upset that they didn't know what to do next. I myself have had this issue and still do here and there. I'm working on it. It really gums up the whole works, where if they gather the team together and go, oop, look at this, you guys, I'm seeing this issue. This is what I'm thinking would solve it and help us to get past it. Do you have any ideas of what you could do? Now, all of a sudden, you have every single person. Let's say you've got the people that are managing the catering, the people that are managing the cleanup, the people that are managing the parking, and all of a sudden, we have a snowstorm coming. This is what I see being a problem. You can engage every single person in, how do we get everybody in here and dry and comfortable Where are we going to put the coats? How are we going to do this in a way that's professional? Because we didn't plan for the snowstorm to hit. Now you've got the parking guys engaged. You've got the caterers engaged, knowing that they're going to have hot tea and coffee immediately instead of after dinner service. You've got your parking people who are looking for ways to get people in the door with, you know, with snow shovels coming out. I mean, everybody can get engaged in this versus someone saying, you know, taking it on by themselves and trying to go through and control everyone with, you need to put tea on before dinner. We don't do it that way. You need to put tea on before dinner because this is what people are going to need. And, you know, here's snow shovels. We want you shoveling the snow. You know, trying to control everything. Everybody can actively be engaged. Try it. I would love for you to do is try it.
Right.
Try showing up with your concern first and watch people rally to support you.
Right. Well, I mean, in an event, you know, the concern is that the event is not going to go off flawlessly. I think everybody is kind of on the same page with that, whether, you know, they're able to actually respond and have the same sort of judgment in the moment is, I guess, the challenging part. And I guess that's where the whole issue about receiving and allowing takes place, is where if somebody doesn't have the same judgment that you would, that you would have, that you're not sort of in needing to control that outcome, or that they have that judgment, you're allowing their judgment to take place and then moving from that space rather than sort of trying to anticipate every.
Yeah. We're almost to the end of the show, so I'm going to have to wrap this up with you, and I really want to thank you for the call.
Hold on.
I just want to say one last thing. Try it, you know, and instead of desiring to have a flawless event, which a flawless event can be dry, boring, dull, and unhappy as much as a unflawed event, maybe you should be looking at the experience that the event could give instead of it being flawless, being the experience of the event. So that way, if mistakes occur, does it affect the experience of the event? And then you can gauge whether or not those mistakes are important. And last but not least, really, I'm hearing, just as a piece to leave you with, I am hearing from the conversation, and if you want to go back and listen to the radio show, you can, allowing other people's input, allowing other people to have their thoughts and their contribution. And there's it's leaning towards a deep distrust of the intellect and the value of others. And so maybe if you've got that many people you distrust in your organization or working with you that are making bad decisions, maybe you need to increase the caliber of the person you're working with if you're really having issues. But otherwise, maybe you should judge the caliber of the person and then look at yourself as to why you're so distrustful of their judgment or their abilities being able to be to support you. Because the people I work with, I have one good rule, and that is I need to know that they could even do it better than I can. And that's who I work with, so that I can look at them honestly and go, here you go, this is what we need, and I know that it's going to come out better than I could have done it myself, because they're just exemplary people. And that might help you with your ability. So I'm going to say thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go, and this is the end of our show for today. I really appreciate having you call in and talk about the control issues. I hope this show is supportive and helpful. Remember the Nonviolent Communication Show, or book, that's a great one to check out. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.